The morning ritual is sponsored by Recess Mood. One healthier alternative to alcohol after a stressful day is Recess Mood. So Recess Mood is a sparkling water, and it's infused with functional ingredients like magnesium and stress-balancing adaptogens. So you can relax without the alcohol or the hangover. Podcast listeners get 15% off the Recess Mood Sampler Pack at takearecess.com/TMR. Recess Mood is made with real fruit, and it comes in 4 delicious flavors like strawberry rose and raspberry lemon. With only 20 calories and no added sugar, it's a guilt-free way to unwind. You deserve a healthier way to unwind. Head to takearecess.com/TMR and get 15% off Recess Mood, your go-to alcohol replacement.
The only consistent is change. And that the only way to get good at it is to stop denying it when it's here and to welcome it and ride it and see what happens. And even, and this is the part that I commit my life to, praise it. Like to actually make beauty and meaning in the midst of change. That's the hardest and I think the most important part.
Welcome to the Morning Ritual Podcast. Meditations and conversations to set the tone for your day. I'm your host, Lily Balch. Today, I'll be sharing with you a conversation that I had with artist and ritualist Day Schildke. We talk about the power of creativity, the importance of process over product, and the reality of impermanence. Over the course of our lives, every single one of us has changed. From my conversation with Day, I learned just how important it is for our change to be witnessed, to be seen. And at the end of the episode, Day shares 3 tangible tips to managing change, big or small. And before we dive in, I want to remind you of the Morning Rituals June gathering. And this month, I'll be joined by my personal business coach and CEO of Perform with Purpose, Ariel Naftali. And as you can probably guess, our theme for this month's gathering is purpose. Ariel will share key insights that will allow you to not only discover your purpose, but do the work that you're really meant for. The June gathering will be held on Wednesday, June 21st at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Simply register using the link in the show notes below, and I look forward to seeing you there. Now to my conversation with Day. Welcome to the podcast, Day.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here. And teeny bit of backstory on my end, which I think is just so cool, is when I first started this podcast, The Morning Ritual, one of my dear friends gifted me your book, Morning Altars, as just like a bit of inspiration to for my podcast. And this was now 3 years ago. And now you're on the podcast, which is just so cool. So that's how I know Day. Day, could you give us a little backstory on Morning Altars?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm just, you know, books are funny. They travel in the world. So I'm so happy one landed in your hands. My backstory is not in a million years would my parents have thought that this would have been my career, but here we are. And there's something about a calling, like there's some truth to a career calling you, or maybe that's even like too benign. For me, this one like grabbed me. I didn't really even have a choice. It just took me. And I remember saying yes to it. I've had other careers. I was a director and on and off Broadway. I was the executive director of a high school for teens. And then this career just grabbed me. It was a few months after my father died and I went through this like massive relationship breakup. And the thing that I was doing to stay sane at the time and to try and like actually like not be overcome by my sorrow and grief was like actually taking my dog on a walk and going into the park near my house and sitting under this one tree and just like collecting things I found along the way. Like it was very simple. It was just like collecting leaves and berries and feathers and, you know, in a basket. And we would just sit under this tree and I would just make something beautiful and symmetrical. And my heart was like healing from that experience. And something significant was happening there just from like the simplest thing, you know? And then it became like an international movement from me just sitting under a tree and making beautiful, symmetrical, impermanent art, which I eventually started to call morning altars, partially because they were happening in the morning on these dog walks, and partially because they were altars. They weren't just like art. They actually became things that I dedicated to my dad, to my ex. Eventually, I just started to dedicate them to like friends getting married, a friend losing their job, someone going through like a massive illness. And they became like the best part of my day, you know, like sitting under this one tree, just like letting my mind go, my worries go, letting myself just be creative. And then people around the world just started to send me pieces that they made for their own reasons. You know, someone, I remember this woman in England, it was like her mother's 10-year anniversary of her death. She didn't know what to do. She was sitting in her kid's parking lot, just flipping through Instagram, feeling bad about herself. And then she came across my work and it inspired her to get out of her car and to go into the forest behind her kid's school and to just like do the practice that I do, which is collect things and sit down and make something beautiful and let it go. And she wrote me and she said it was the first time in 10 years that she felt like she was connected to her mom, which was like, you know, getting stuff like that is just incredibly powerful. And now I teach this around the world, and I actually teach, the biggest thing I'm doing right now is I'm teaching teachers how to do this and to bring this practice back into their communities and their families and their businesses. It's amazing how something that changed my life, that was very personal, very private, became something that is now impacting tens of thousands of people around the world. And I like to call this practice like a Trojan horse practice, because it's like, you know, it's like how much impact can making something out of leaves bring, you know? And it's enormous. It changed my life and it's changing thousands of people's lives. I just, by the way, did a workshop yesterday in Monterey, California for an organization that takes care of children with illnesses and cancer. And I just led a workshop for nurses and palliative care professionals and therapists, teaching them how to do this practice to not only support their own work and their, you know, their health as service people, service providers, but also to support the families and the children who are really struggling and they need ways to like move their grief.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very, you know, like I'm in a career that's taken me, it feels often very vulnerable to be in this kind of career. It's not like I'm a doctor or a lawyer. You know, I'm an artist and a ritualist and a teacher making and teaching people how to make things that don't last.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's amazing and vulnerable and exciting and creative and all of the things. So anyway, that's a little introduction to my work.
Thank you. Thank you. And I mean, there's a few layers packed in here where it's, you're not only taking time to create, to be present, but you're in nature, you're using your hands, you're working with art and beauty. And so all these combined.
And impermanence.
They have such a, each one of those individually has such a healing aspect and you're combining them all. But I think the coolest thing about this work is that you weren't, it sounds to me that you weren't like, I'm going to create this so that I can heal. It sounds to me that you just were drawn to it in your sorrow. You found that it was helping you feel better. And you went through that sort of process to then discover, whoa, the healing benefits. Because I think sometimes we do practices, rituals for the end result And we forget that it's a process that we have to trust.
This entire practice, everything that I teach, everything that I do and everything I teach is journey oriented. It's not goal oriented. In my first book, I coined a phrase, destination addiction. You know, this is kind of how I hear you naming it right now, is like trying to get there. Like I'm doing something to get to the thing, right? And that's not at all how this started at all. And also, this is not this practice actually is the complete opposite. This practice is all about getting lost. It's all about discovery. It's all about exploration. It's all about wonder. It is not interested in getting there or getting the healing or getting the perfect thing, or it's all process-based. And to me, that is really at the heart and soul of nature and at the heart and soul of creativity and at the heart and soul of mindfulness. They're all process-based experiences. They're not about any there.
Yeah, and I think when we have the mentality of I'm doing this to heal X, Y, and Z, it's like counterintuitive.
Totally.
So thank you for that reminder. And I kind of want to shift the conversation into what's going on with you. Is there anything that you've been like navigating? I mean, you seem to have such, you know, a grounded, clear perspective on life, but you're human too.
Very human.
Sure, you've got stuff that you're navigating.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, I don't know how you feel, but all of the things that I'm drawn to, for instance, like thresholds, interstitial realms, like meaning the in-between spaces, transitions, change. Like if you look at the last, I don't know, 15 years of my life, career-wise, like I'm drawn to like helping people navigate change. I mean, the freaking subtitle of my most recent book, Hello Goodbye, the subtitle is 75 rituals for times of loss, celebration, and change. Right? Like I'm looking to plant myself at this doorway of goodbye and hello, like that space, that in-between space. And yet it's like so brutal to be there for me, you know, because it's like, that's the space I'm the most attracted to, but it's also the space that like has the most to teach me and undoes me the most. And sometimes I'm just craving stability and not change, you know? And so there's that tension in my life.
You are in some ways an expert on navigating change, yet you still come across the inevitable suffering that comes with change.
Yeah.
Is that true? Do you think all change, good or bad, involves some level of suffering?
No, I think all change, good or bad, involves some level of surrender. And the suffering comes through the resistance. And there are times where I am in full resistance, and then there are times where I'm fully surrendered, and then there are times where like I oscillate between the two, and there are times I don't know what the fuck's going on. And you know, so it's like the image when you said that was, oh, I got an image of like surfing on a wave, you know, and it's not like there's suffering in that. Sure, there could be, you know, I've gotten hurt while surfing. But a lot of the time it's just about like, what is my posture and relationship with this moment? And when surfing, or for me, I'm more of a skier, you know, but even skiing, it's just like, every moment is changed. That's what makes it exciting. But there's real consequences sometimes, you know, and you can really hurt yourself and it's really risky, but that's what makes it thrilling. And so, you know, I think that just to position like what the conversation we're talking about in terms of a bigger conversation, like the culture and society that I and you live in is totally terrified of change, raises its people to be in denial of change. And we don't train or give our children the skill sets to properly navigate it, right? So the whole culture that we're in, how I grew up, is all about like security and safety and permanence and all of these spells. And so it takes a lot to shift out of that and to recognize that life is the only consistent is change. And that the only way to get good at it is to stop denying it when it's here and to welcome it and ride it and see what happens. And even, and this is the part that like I'm committed my, I commit my life to, praise it. Mm. Like to actually make beauty and meaning in the midst of change. That's the hardest and I think the most important part.
Yeah. And what change are you currently navigating?
What change am I not navigating? Yeah. I mean, I just moved into a new home 2 weeks ago.
Big change.
Okay. So just to like put that, it's not even moving into a new home. That's the big change. I have been on the road without my own home for 5 years.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. I have not, before 2 weeks ago, I had not seen my things, which were in storage for 5 years, half a decade.
And is this pandemic related?
Everything's pandemic related in a way, but no, 5 years ago, my first book was published. I was like, I am good at letting myself follow whims. I would even consider myself sometimes whimsical. So I let myself just like, oh, this book wants to come out into the world. I need to go on a book tour. At the same time, the house I was living in the East Bay in California, in the Bay Area, was being sold. And so I said, oh, there's an opportunity here. I'm going to put my things in storage and I'm going to go on the road with this book and see where it takes me, right? Employing the practice that I practice about like wandering, but like in my life, not just like for an hour, like let's just wander for a bit. And the road took me for 2 years. I was in a new city every 5 days for 2 years. And then about 2 years in, I was like, I want to write another book and I want to go on a book. I want to go on a writing retreat. I love this island in British Columbia called Salt Spring Island. I'm going to go up there and do like a couple months of writing. And then I got there for the first time, like Airbnb'd a house and was not moving like every 5 days. Like I was there for a couple months. And then the pandemic hit, the borders closed. And what started as a couple month writing retreat became 2 years. Living in a tiny home on the edge of the ocean, not my place. Having an amazing experience, but like so much to navigate with the pandemic. And then basically finished the book and crossed the border back into the States on the same exact day. And yeah. And then last year tried living in Portland, in Los Angeles. I didn't feel called to that. And then I'm in Sebastopol right now. And I'm like making home and leading a completely different lifestyle.
The big change actually is more stability.
More stability, more regularity, friends stopping by, you know, community. Speaking of, there's one stopping by right now who's about to like knock on the door. and the thing that's like the most, the thing that's the most, I'd say, emotional is encountering myself from 5 years ago. That part surprised me, and is the I think the thing I'm struggling with in the transition the most.
And are there feelings of like nostalgia?
No, it's a different kind of I don't know if I would call it pain. It's a different kind of it's a different feeling. Let me try and describe it. I just wrote about it. Let me try and describe it and see if I can get to the right word, which is my things have been away from me for 5 years. I have changed a lot in 5 years, as you can imagine, as I'm sure you have and the people listening have. You know, it's a substantial amount of time. And I've been reunited with the things that I identify as me, like furniture and clothing and jewelry and all the things that like were my taste and what I liked and how I saw myself and all of these things. And then I'm reunited with them. And then the thing that's coming up is I don't feel connected to that me. You know, I'm not that person anymore. I don't want these things. I don't want to be surrounded by the person that I was 5 years ago. I want to be surrounded by the person that I am today. So how do I let go of these things without judging them as bad or like wrong, or, you know, judging the person that liked those things? Like, even though I don't relate to them right now, like, how do I love my 5-year-old person, not 5-year-old, but 5 years ago person? How do I love him and love his taste and love his choices and love the different ways that he expressed himself? Also, while remembering that I am different. I'm a different person, and I have different tastes, and I have different desires, and I have different ways of expressing myself now. And they both need to live in harmony with each other. And that's the part that that's one of the top things I'm struggling with, is how to create enough space to like love and welcome and receive that person that I haven't encountered in 5 years, without demonizing him, and also with like deeply respecting my own need for new beginnings and new expressions and a new home that represents the new person that I am.
Yeah. And it's ever changing. So in the next Definitely. 5 years, but that's a unique situation to be in, where you haven't seen your belongings in 5 years. It's almost, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of like if a loved one passed away and you're just like, haven't been ready to look at the stuff. 5 years later, you're like, okay, I'm going to open this box. And of course the grieving is obviously different, but it's this, whoa.
It also, it's comparable to like not like having an ex who you haven't seen in 5 years, and then you like run into them and you're like, oh, I'm encountering the person that I was in this relationship. Like, I'm feeling those feelings, right? I haven't seen you in 5 years, but I'm feeling these weird feelings that I haven't felt in 5 years, but I'm not that same person, but I'm still feeling these feelings. Right? It's confusing because like you've changed, but you're in the presence of something that looks the same. You know, I don't know if you've been to like a high school reunion or something like that, but it's kind of similar.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, I can relate. Especially I moved out of New York City about 2 years ago. And of course I was recently back there last week. Lots of similar emotions, and right. I'm curious, in these moments of more difficult, more uncomfortable emotions that are rising, and you're met with this previous version of you being mirrored back, what do you do? Do you just let those emotions rise and observe, and that classic take of mindfulness, just understanding that you are not your thoughts, you're not your emotions, let it pass. Do you have a ritual for this?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I'm a ritualist. So, you know, to me, there's something to be said about the about proceeding with mindfulness. That's very helpful. But when it comes to life transitions, big or small, I put my stake in the ground with ritual, because that's like, that is where a lot of meaning is made and understanding happens and emotion can be expressed and witnessing. And so the thing that I am realizing that I need to do is I need to invite my friends over, and I need to do a big giveaway of my things. And part of the party is going to be like everyone's sitting around and I'm literally going to either gift people directly or they can take what they want from like a pile of things. But I have the caveat is I need to tell my story. I need to tell the story of these things. I need to tell the story of who I was. I need to tell the story of where I've been. I need to be witnessed as someone who's changed. If that doesn't happen, I'm always going to have this tension internally between like fighting. You know, here's a good example, by the way. Like, this has happened to me a lot where like I have gone, it doesn't happen anymore because my father is dead and my mother has mid-stage dementia. So like that, this doesn't happen now, but it has happened in the past where like I would go home for like a holiday and my bedroom would like still kind of look like it did when I was a kid. And my parents would kind of still treat me like I was a kid. And there would be this tension in the house always between like, that's not who I am. This is who I am. And like kind of like falling back or being treated like who I was. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, right? And there's something about returning from something, either college or travels or art or a war even, coming back home and being witnessed by people that care about you, that you've changed, right? There's something psychological that happens with being witnessed as like, you're not you, like your friends or community are basically like, you're not, we see you, you're a different person. You're not the same person.
We see you. I think that is the key. We see you as you are now.
Yeah.
That witness.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like a lot of data, by the way, around, you know, I mean, you can do a deep dive around, for instance, like in this country, like the Vietnam War, soldiers came back from the war and like no one treated them different. Yet they had this like huge experience across the world and lost friends and like lost body parts and had PTSD and like, and they came back home and everyone was just like, didn't see them as anything's changed. And that causes a lot of mental illness. And we need each other. We need to witness each other. We need to witness each other when we, especially when we go through changes. So I need my friends to gather around me and hear my story. I have not been here in 5 years. You know, like I've been so many places. I've had so many experiences. I wasn't even gray when I left.
Seriously. That's so funny. So you're going to have a party. You're going to bring your friends over. You're going to gift the stuff that you don't want anymore and tell your story. Your friends are going to witness the change and see you as you are now. And that's your ritual.
Absolutely.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Very simple, very doable. Everyone walks out of there with something meaningful physically, right? They're like carrying my goodies, my like treasures away. And it's even more meaningful because like now they know the story of it and like now they have it, right? So it's like not that they bought it in the store. They're like getting like gifted by things that have meant something to me. And then I don't have to hold them anymore. It doesn't have to be like, I don't need to surround myself with like all these things that like meant something to me like years ago. They get to move into the world and become like important to other people. And also like what's super helpful in that is the witnessing part. right? Is like people actually get to witness, and they get to witness my story, and they get to witness like what I'm struggling with in the same way that like talking to you right now is really helpful. You know, like when we go through major changes in our lives, if we do it in silence, it can really fuck us up. If we do it alone, it can really mess us up. We need, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, everyone's ancestors would go through massive changes and be witnessed by the village or by communities. And suddenly we're in this time that's super isolating, and we're going through these massive changes, but we're trying to do it alone. And that's where a lot of mental illness happens. So much of the time, we just need to be heard, you know, and witnessed.
Yeah. And I think nowadays, the most common way to kind of feel like you're being witnessed is like social media,
right?
And Instagram,
right?
And that just doesn't have the same energy behind it.
Not only that, it's like it doesn't have the same energy. But I, you know, I post a lot. I'm doing my best to post on social media from a profoundly vulnerable place, because that is the kind of messaging I want to put into the world. And it's scary sometimes. Like I just put out a post on Friday that was talking all about the pain of being single and childless in a community. Most of my friends here have kids and are coupled, and how much like the entire community and day to day like circles around the children. And you know, I was just trying to express my pain and my desire to not be invisibilized as a single childless person, you know, where like the whole culture rewards children and families, right? So I'm trying to put out posts on social media that are quite vulnerable and be witnessed. But the issue is, as you were saying, is that like the kind of witnessing is not, it's more like people can relate to what I'm saying, but like for me to actually be witnessed in my pain, I need to see you. I need to like touch you. I need to be able to cry in front of you, and for you, and like for you possibly to like start to well up too, because you can relate to what I'm saying. Like, that is the kind of witnessing that we all need. That is just not, it's not possible. And it's also not appropriate for social media. And then on top of that, social media has just become a place where a lot of people are posting kind of like ideal lifestyles and ideal, you know, situations. And like I'm on my game, I'm at the top of things, I'm crushing it. It's like, this is what, you know, and there's not a lot of space for just like, I'm hurting, or that failed, or I don't know what to do, I'm really confused. And, you know, and so it's not that safe of a place for those real hard, honest conversations that like we all need to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I totally understand you, where you need to be witnessed face to face in that way with these, you know, more challenging emotions, and give the other people also the opportunity to relate. So that's beautiful. And I'm going to really think about a ritual that I can do. And for a similar sense, where I'm going, you know, back to the US again this summer, seeing a lot of people I haven't seen in 3 years. And yeah.
What do you want? Like, what do you want from those exchanges?
I guess there's a part of me that wants to just slip right back into the way things used to be. But I understand that that's not reality. I can't, if I try to slip right back into that, it's really not productive. I don't think it's going to be really super enjoyable or authentic. And so it's actually what you said, is to be seen as I am in that moment, the changed version of me, and to see also the changed version of all these other beautiful friends that I haven't seen in years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like riffing off of my story, the thing that is so easy and so accessible and such like a conversation starter and can be ritualistic at the same time is a gift. And sometimes I, you know, if I'm meeting up with someone I haven't seen in a while, like I'll bring a little gift that is a, like a launching point for a conversation, right? Like it'll be a gift from someplace I've been, and then I'll give it. And like, because it's a gift, there's like so much receptivity and like gratitude that comes with it, but there's also an opening for a story. And what I love about that is that the story can be a reflection of the change. It can be an opportunity to like share, like, look, this is like what I've been through. This is how I've changed. This is where I've been. This came from that place. And like, you know, it's a real kind of like undercover way of being seen and witnessed by being generous. So, you know, I don't know, if I were in your shoes, I would like buy some gifts from the place that I am, that from the place that I'm living and the person that I am, and then bring it back to like the place that I've been and the people that were, you know, everyday people to me, and like gift them.
Hmm. I love that. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely will. And from circling back to this overarching theme of navigating change and transitions, just to kind of close out this conversation. I'm sure anybody who's, you know, made it to the end of the episode can relate to some extent about how hard change and transition can be. And if you could just sum up the maybe three of the things that work for you the most when navigating this change and transition, little three tips for anyone who can relate.
Sure. Yeah. Number one, rule number one is slow down. That's number one. Don't try and get through it. Don't force yourself through it. Don't try and return back to normal. Like, honor and respect the interstitial, the space of transition. If you try and rush through it, you're going to get to the other side of it, but you're going to try and like, life is going to change, but you're still going to think you haven't. And you're going to, the psyche is going to be very confused. So number one is slow down and acknowledge something's happening. Rule number one. Okay. And that's hard to do. Like, you know, I just moved into a new home. Like, the thing I want to do is like unpack and organize and get things done and sell things. And like, it's really hard to slow down and be like, oh shit, I'm in a totally new place. You know, it feels vulnerable. So that's number one, is slow down. Number two, and in slowing down is kind of like number two, which is like acknowledge that something happened. Like, something happened. I am not on the road anymore. I'm in a new home. Or like, I'm not working. I'm retired. Or I'm no longer single. I'm in a relationship. Or my dad's no longer alive. He's dead. Or whatever it is. But the acknowledgement is really important. And that can happen by yourself or with friends. But just in some way to say out loud, something happened. Something's changed. Right? So slow down, number one, acknowledge, number two. And then number three is like what I am committed my life to, which is to make it meaningful, to make the change mean something. And that can look in in 10,000 different ways. I have no idea what that looks to, you know, everyone. But for me, it's like, make the change mean something. Have lift it up, look at it, make it into something that matters. And to me, the way to do that is through ritual and ceremony. And in ritual and ceremony, we play a lot with symbolism and meaning. And so, you know, I call it in my most recent book, they're called symbolic actions. So you do something, break something, bury something, rip something, tear something, burn something, you know, all of these things to symbolize what just happened, right? So like a good friend of mine just got divorced, or like 2 weeks ago. And she knew she wanted to let go of, do something meaningful to let go of that marriage. But like the divorce process, by the way, is like really intense. And then there's lawyers, and then there's documents and money. And there's like a lot of shit that she's just trying to get through. But because I'm in her life, I'm just like advocating for like, don't rush through this. You will be on the other side of this soon enough. But like, you're in a very amazing spot where you're leaving a 20-year relationship. You have two kids. Right. And you're going to be soon divorced and single and have a totally different life. But before you get there, what's happening? How does this feel? Where are you? Like, what are you wished for? What are you scared of? What do you not want to change? What do you want to change? Like, big questions, right? Like, dream into these questions. And then like, what could be the button, the symbolic action that like, says, I'm no longer married to this person, who, by the way, I introduced 20 years ago to her. I introduced them 20 years ago. But like, great, you're not married to him anymore. What do you want to do? And she's like, I need to bury that ring. I'm like, great, great. Take that ring. I will witness you. She lives in New York. So like, it was a FaceTime. And I was like in her backyard with her on FaceTime. And I asked her these big questions, and she's crying, and she's a mess, and she's, you know, we're laughing, and we're remembering 20 years ago when I introduced them, and like, we're going through a whole thing. And then I just eventually was like, now's the time. And there was some like finality to that, you know, like this ring you've been wearing for 20 years, this ring you love, you have to let it go. You're no longer married to him anymore. And I'm witnessing you. And by the way, there's a great play on that word with witness. In my recent book, I quoted an author, Bio Kumalafe, and he plays with the word, he calls it withness, which is what I did with her, right? I stayed with her in her pain, in her tenderness, in her uncertainty, in her excitement, all the emotions. I stayed with her. I didn't hang up the phone. I didn't like pull back because it was uncomfortable. I didn't like overshare my experience. I just stayed with her. And eventually she took off the ring off her finger and she dug a hole with her hands and she buried it in the ground and she watered that hole with her tears, right? She was crying. And I was like, are you ready to put it in the ground? She's like, yeah. And so she just took all the dirt and she like covered the ring up. And you know, we had a moment where we like paused again and I told her I loved her. And I was like, I'm so excited for the person you're going to become, you know? And that was it. And it was by doing that ritual, she did those three things I told you about. She slowed down in the transition, right? She acknowledged something major was happening. And then she did something to make that transition meaningful. And she got witnessed by me. And so like she's carrying on with her life right now, but like something in her soul, she said, feels settled about it. Whereas if she didn't do that, I think she would still feel like that something happened, but like that she wasn't being acknowledged for it. You know, we have wedding ceremonies, but we don't have divorce ceremonies. You know, we invite tons of our friends to our weddings, but do we invite those same friends to our divorces? No. So oftentimes these things happen like under the table or like in closed rooms. And then we're expected to like live our lives as if like nothing happened and something massive happened. So I tried to offer her just like, I'm her oldest friend. I tried to offer her just one person witnessing her, and that was enough.
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful story and a beautiful example. And I think in the midst of these more difficult changes, I'm sure it was sort of her instinct to avoid the pain and rush the process when you got in there and said, slow down and ask these questions. And it's rare to see a friend or a family member, a loved one, step in that way. And so totally. You certainly inspired me, and like, what a great friend.
Thank you. Yeah. And like, you know, it doesn't have to be these massive, you know, life changes. Like, to me, I do a ritual every morning and every evening. You know, it's like, there could be like little touch-ins. You know, life is changing all the time. Sometimes it's these big, massive changes, but sometimes it's just like waking up, or, you know, like going to bed, or these like little things that happen. And the same thing can apply, like slow down, like you're waking up, slow down for a minute, right? Acknowledge something's happening. Like, I was just sleeping, I'm about to start my day. And then do something symbolic that can like make it more meaningful. When I was writing Hello Goodbye, I needed, and it was like the heart of the pandemic. I needed like a touchstone every morning to just stay like sane. So at night, I would take a pencil, and on my coffee filter, I just wrote like a message to my morning self on it. Right. And then so I woke up in the morning, and then before I made coffee, I would just read that message on the coffee filter. And I would just like take in a breath and just be like, thank you. Like, I needed that. Like, I needed a touchstone. I needed to remember that like there's something bigger than this shit show that's happening right now. And that was so simple. It took me like 5 seconds the night before, but it was so meaningful. It literally felt like my like yesterday self was looking out for me, you know?
Yeah.
So big and small moments.
Yeah. Well, that's gorgeous. Thank you for sharing that day. And I'm certainly going to put your books in the show notes below, and your website for people to contact you. And I really appreciate you coming on and not only sharing your expertise, but sharing your own journey and your story right now.
Thank you. And I just want to say, like, for anyone listening that's going through something, that's going through like a hard change, or even like a medium to hard change, I want you to know you're not alone. And I think part of the point of our conversation today to me is like not trying to put myself on a pedestal, like I've mastered it. But in some ways just to be like, I get knocked down as much as you do. And the practice is to stand back up and to somehow like cultivate some resilience, and also make it meaningful, like make life more meaningful. Even the shit that like sucks and that knocks you down, and that where you're like, I can't do it anymore, you know, that we have this amazing skill that's been around since the beginning of time as humans, is to like make life matter and meaningful. And we can do that. And so I want you to know, listener, that you're not alone, and I'm with you in being knocked down, and I'm also with you in standing back up again.
Yeah, the good, the bad, and the ugly can make it all meaningful.
Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you again, and we'll close out this episode the way we always do, with a full deep breath in, a complete breath out, and have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.